off your feet. Clap your hands, you're part of the team sitting in the stands. Come see what's brewing. Come see what the good times are. Come see what the...
Back here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, we talked about it earlier in the show. George Webb has announced August 20th is the day from 2 until 6 where you can go in and get a burger. But it appears, Joshy, that many of the locations, most of the locations at this point, already have the vouchers. Now, I am unclear. I want to be clear on my unclearness that if you can go in today, if you could walk into a George Webb location today and procure a voucher for a burger for a future time. I'm unclear on that. But our friend Sandy Max over at WTMJ did some research, called all of the George Webbs, and for the most part, they all have vouchers in. So we are still trying to figure out if that means, hey, green light, show up. Grab a voucher. You can then, you know, cash it in on another day, redeem it on another day. We haven't figured that out quite yet. But of course, the Brewers, winners of 12 straight, going for 13 tonight. 13 would tie the franchise record set in 1987 by, obviously, the Brewers. And so we were talking about just the way that they have done this. What has all come together to make this team so hot? And what's crazy is, the world, the nation is talking about the Brewers, right? I saw Trevor McGill was on the Pat McAfee show. We are efforting some sound from him as well. Front Office Sports is talking about the Brewers, obviously MLB and ESPN and all of the things. But listen to this, because David Sampson is a former baseball executive, and he obviously does a lot of work with the Dan Le Batard show. I'm struggling with this take by him, but I want everybody to listen to it first before you and I give our reaction to it. So, Will, give me David Sampson, former MLB executive and host of Nothing Personal, talking about the Brewers.
David, the Milwaukee Brewers have won 12 in a row after yesterday afternoon's game. Like, is this a team that could wind up making a run in the postseason?
No.
It's going to be hard. It's going to be because they're peaking. You can't peak in August. It's the worst plan. It's like sort of finishing everything like while you're still at the movie and you're like, well, wait a minute, we have a whole night ahead of us. You just don't want to do that. You want to time it right. I'd rather see which team's going to be hot toward the end of September heading into October. And you really don't want to be the team that runs away with the best record, because then you sort of lose that edge.
Our friend Jonathan Zaslow filling in on the Dan Le Batard show there. I don't like this take at all. And it's not because, oh, I'm here in Milwaukee and I want to believe that the Brewers can go the distance. It's because I don't think that's how baseball works. I always push everything through a running prism. I was a runner. I ran competitively. And so there always was talk of, you don't want to peak too early. You don't want to be running your best times in the middle of the season. The goal is to fashion your workouts in such a way that you have your best times when the races are most important. I don't think that's how baseball is, right? So you could be growing your base. You could be backing off on pace. You could be doing all of these things to sort of make sure that you are peaking at the end of the season. How in the world would you do that in baseball? Now, I guess you could argue who you trot out on the mound, Joshy, you know, the way that they are limiting Jacob Mizorowski right now. But I don't think that baseball is a sport where you go, hey, we're going to go 75% today because we want to make sure that we are, quote unquote, peaking in September. Am I wrong in reading it this way when it comes to just the generalities of how baseball works?
No, I think the statement from David Sampson makes sense until you start, I don't know, thinking about it for more than 10 seconds. Because the two things here are, baseball is something that's played every single day. The Brewers have enough time for the rest of the season to peak again, to regress, to peak again, you know, to slump. And then by the time it comes around, they could rattle off 6 wins to end the season, and they're playing as good as anyone else. The other part of this is, in peaking too early, you would have to argue that it would be somehow beneficial for the team to start losing games. That there is some unknown good that comes from having a worse regular season record. It also...
Wait, hasn't Chewy been trying to push this narrative?
Yes, he has. Yes.
Hasn't he said, like, and I believe he said it the other day, and who did you guys have on from the Milwaukee Brewers? I wasn't here, but...
Jeff Levering.
You had Jeff Levering on, and Levering was like, no.
Yeah.
You don't want to lose 4 games in a row, or 5 games in a row, or whatever it may be, in order to then catapult yourself to another win streak.
I think, and another thing you've sort of been talking about a bit here is battle tested. I think there is value to the stakes rising with every win. And not to say George Webb free burgers is the thing that makes them battle tested, but it's another, as you put it, another notch sort of in the belt of, hey, there's more attention on us because of this. There's more fans in the stadium, and there's more people nationally paying attention to the Milwaukee Brewers, not just because of the 12-game win streak, but also because of the streak of games that they've won over the past 30. I think one of the tests you could say is facing the Dodgers at home and on the road and sweeping them. That's a big thing. And the first two games they won in both those series, they looked around and said, hey, it'd be huge if we could sweep this. And they had extra pressure on themselves. I also think playing the Cubs and that series at AmFam Field with all the fans from both fan bases there.
And all the storylines, yes, and all the dynamics, that's and another, the rivalry, yes.
That's another elevated event. And so is winning 12 in a row and streaking this way. You are giving yourself sort of inflated, almost artificial, not
pressure.
Intelligence.
I said pressure.
Yes. You're raising the stakes within your own organization. If you're just winning 2 out of 3 week in and week out, yeah, that's good. But your level of pressure around it isn't the same as when you're ripping off just a bunch of wins, right, win after win.
And the fact that they've been able to withstand that pressure, again, it is not the same as an NLDS series.
No.
It is not the same as an NLCS series. We're not talking about playoff pressure, but we are saying it is hard to manufacture pressure during the regular season,
right,
because the season is such a grind, because there are so many games day in and day out. The next level of this is, what exactly does David Sampson think peaking is? Peaking is just winning a lot of games? I thought that was the goal.
Yes.
I almost forgot that that's the whole point, right? Like the meme says. I don't understand what not peaking looks like. Is it not winning consecutive games? Is it winning a game, losing a game, winning a game, losing a game? Would that be considered not peaking? Would that be considered his optimum plan, his optimum blueprint for future success? And you brought up another point. I want to make sure to give you credit for this, because you said, how in the world can you be considered peaking when they've got all of these guys,
right,
unavailable?
Right. Wouldn't the peak come when you have Jackson Chourio, Rhys Hoskins, and Jacob Mizorowski? Isn't that the best form of the Brewers team? Yeah, they've played their best without them, but do we think adding all those guys, two of them should be at some point all-stars. Another one has been in the past. It's just, I think the real peak for the Brewers is when all those guys are back, everyone's healthy, and not to say that all members of the roster are going to be healthy at the same time, but those are gigantic contributors. And those are guys that have been relied on at different points of the season, and having them all back together is going to be huge.
So, in my baseball career, I've always experienced the longest playoff runs we've ever had, or the teams I've been on have had, are when you get cold right before the playoffs start. But, and that's what I used to think with the Brewers, but I've thrown all of that out the window by now.
Does this go back to what we had said about rewiring your brain? All of the things you thought you knew about,
yes,
baseball, this team is sort of forcing you to change?
Right. And obviously my baseball career, very comparable to the Brewers.
Well, I'm glad that you said it, because I was going to nail you on it. But
baseball might be the sport we kind of treat athletes as like unthinking and unfeeling beings the most. But I think, as with all, the level of confidence you can get in yourselves and your teammates around a streak like this, I think is going to be beneficial heading into the postseason. If you have a bad game and you get shut out, you think, we've been here before. And this isn't a team that's led bell to bell. This was a team that was under 500 in May. This is a team that knows what it was like and what it took to get out of that. So any sort of slump, I don't think is going to ruin them and then affect them the rest of the season. They can look around and go, we've been here before. We know what it takes.
So I want to attack this philosophically as well, okay? Because again, we are talking about David Sampson, who said that he believes the Brewers are peaking too early. Yes, it is August. There is still 6 weeks left. How many weeks left of the season? It ends obviously the end of September. About 6, right? 6 or 7 weeks left in the season. When you think about the way a season goes and you think about the data points and the information gained as a baseball season goes on. Sometimes it is as simple as when you do film study on an opposing pitcher and you know what their preferred pitch is on a specific count, right? Now you've got that in your database. So now your players could be more informed when they are standing in the batter's box against a certain pitcher. So basically what this argues is that the Brewers are ahead of schedule in gathering information, that they have enough data points that they have been able to go out there and successfully beat these teams day in and day out, series in and series out. And you're basically saying, hold up. Save some data, save some information, save some growth, some learning, some success for later on. And while I will argue, they do need to make sure that they are healthy and still having a certain level of success later in the season, you're banking wins.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that. Just because you're ahead of schedule on being able to beat these teams and having all of the information or the confidence or whatever the secret sauce is to being this successful, just because you're ahead of schedule doesn't mean you take your foot off the gas.
Yeah.
So I am trying to give David Sampson, who, again, I have said is a Major League Baseball former executive, the benefit of the doubt here. But I can't find a way for my brain to say, yes, it is problematic that the Brewers are winning so many games right now in the middle of the season, and it doesn't guarantee future wins in September.
I just think it's one of those things that sounds better before you dissect what it would actually mean. I understand intuitively the point he's driving at, but the inverse of this is Murphy looking around and saying, hey, guys, we should score a little less. Hey, Freddy Peralta, why don't you give up a few more runs? Why don't you just sort of let this team go by? Trevor McGill, blow a save or two. That'll be good for us. I can't envision a world where that's beneficial to the team. And I'm not even doubting that there probably is going to be a two-game losing streak throughout the rest of the 6 weeks. But I don't think that's going to be good for the team. I think win as much as you can and prove to yourself and ride as high as you can heading into the playoffs. Because, I mean, Gabe talked about it. The division in this five-game series, we all kind of like circled against the Cubs. Like, oh, wow, we got to see where we're at. Right now, the Brewers could lose every single game.
And still have the lead in the division.
Yeah, which is
unbelievable.
Like, you go into that Cubs series and you win 2 out of 3 and you go, hey, I would have loved to have taken the series against them, but we're fine. Let's get ready for next series.
Even the fact that you just mentioned a two-game losing skid as a losing
yes,
streak.
Yes.
Where normally that's just baseball.
Yes,
right?
That's
like
just
again,
what
teams we are rewiring our brain. Lots of reaction rolling in on the Carbless talk and text line. Justin weighing in saying Chewy has asked this question multiple times. The consensus response has been exactly what you said, Jen. It's not possible to peak too early. Yes, you will go through struggles, but you can turn things around if you're consistent when you go through those struggles. The Brewers have been consistent at least for the last few weeks, certainly. Haven't we said how important it is to get the top spot in the overall standings? That from Ian in the 262. I'd rather be the best team in baseball instead of the hottest team that sneaks into the playoffs and gets stuck in the wild card. Yes, there is a theory also that like the hot teams win. But the Brewers are the hot team now. And just because they're the hot team now, there is no quota, guys. There is no quota that says, whoa, yeah, you used your hot team card. You already cashed it in. You can't be the hot team in September. That is obviously doable. And to your point, Joshy, with so much time left in the season, you could have a down and an up and a down and an up all within the final few weeks of the Major League Baseball regular season. We'll take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Keep getting us your reaction. David Sampson saying the Brewers are peaking too early. He thinks that's problematic. Let us know your reaction to that. Hey, guys, if you are looking to bring more organization and beauty to your home, I cannot recommend Closets by Design enough. I am at the point in my life where clutter really ramps up my anxiety. I've been working with Doug and his team in Mequon for the past few months to try to keep that at bay. Look, I've collected a lot of clothes in the 25 years I've been on television, and my closet represented that. So Doug and his team came in, told me to take some deep breaths, and they said, we're going to get you in a spot, Jen, that feels more healthy and more organized. And that's what they did. Put a great closet in for me. They are a leader in custom storage solutions. They have been since 1982. They combine quality, beauty, and a true commitment to customer satisfaction. They're a national brand, yes, but Doug and his team are based in southeastern Wisconsin, so they can bring that personal touch to your space. A beautiful showroom in Mequon that you can visit and see all the options for your space. They offer a no-obligation in-home consultation, custom designs, and the best value in the industry. If you are ready to get organized, call Closets by Design in Mequon and tell them Jen from Jen, Gabe, and Chewy sent you.
Jen, Gabe, and Chewy are back after this on 94.5 ESPN.
Finding the right home is always a journey. Sometimes it's quick, sometimes you have to be patient, but it should always be exciting. The We Sell Group at Keller Williams understands that. They're not just about closing deals. They're about building relationships and helping you find the right fit. My family, well, we've been looking for a lake house, and gosh, it is taking us a long time. Maybe because we've got very specific things that we want in the lake house, or maybe because the market is just really wild right now. Either way, Nick and Rob have been so patient with us. They're informative, and they have been available throughout the process. If you're ready to move right now, or you're starting to look, or you're thinking about selling, the We Sell Group is on the journey with you every step of the way. Start your journey today at the We Sell Group at wesell.kw.com. wesell.kw.com. You know, the college football season is right around the corner. Feels like Wisconsin will be taking the field against Miami of Ohio in just a few weeks. College game day starting up the last Saturday of the month. Obviously, I've mentioned that is the Coach Corso celebration for college game day, and we will be at Columbus. But I saw this clip yesterday circling on social media, and I thought it had some real value. And for our loyal listeners and for people out there who, you know, obviously care about sports and care about college football, I do think that we should take a listen to it. So this is the, I believe it's punter for Nebraska, yesterday addressing the media. Take it away, Will.
So what's it like being first time you're away from them?
Yeah, that part's hard. I mean, I'm sorry. Yeah, I love them a lot. Yeah, I've got two little brothers and my mom and dad, and that's the tough part about being here. I love them a lot and I miss them, but they know this is what's best for me, and it's good. I can still talk to them plenty over the phone, and they're coming here to see the first few games, so I'm looking forward to that.
So that's Archie Wilson. He is the punter for Nebraska. He's 19 years old, and if you couldn't tell from his accent, guys, he's Australian. So he is here in the States, you know, middle America. From Australia, there is quite a pipeline of Australian punters and guys who, you know, come over and play in college, get the opportunity. But I loved how vulnerable he was. I loved that when asked about his family, the gut reaction for a lot of people, a lot of guys, a lot of young men this age, Joshy, would be to clam up, zip it up, keep it together, act tough, be tough, got to show your toughness. And he was more than willing to be like, this is hard. Being away from my family, I'm 19 years old. I miss them. Been here in training camp, working on Nebraska. I recognize how great this opportunity is. I don't take it for granted, but there are parts of it that is difficult. I thought was so important. And in this space, sports, where so often men are being told to behave and present themselves a certain way, I really thought there was value in seeing this kid have a genuine, authentic reaction to a situation that obviously he is struggling with.
Yeah, it's remarkably humanizing. And thinking back to yourself, myself at 19 years old, being halfway across the world in this atmosphere that I'm sure he's not accustomed to at all. I'm sure there's more to just simply missing his family, but being in front of the media in that way, this is Big Ten football now. I'm in the middle of Nebraska. There's people with cameras and microphones.
I mean, you can make the argument that in Nebraska,
yes,
that's the only show in town,
right,
by the way.
Right, and I'm sure all those factors added into a kid having an extremely human moment. And 19 years old, think about myself at 19, I wasn't prepared to be halfway across the world from my family. I wasn't prepared to be talking in a professional sense and not saying anything wrong, and the pressure that comes with, you know, what coaches tell you all the time. Don't make yourself a headline, all that stuff. It's interesting to see something like that juxtaposed against, like, the warrior sport that is football. Now, I'm sure people are going to discredit him. He's a soft punter. I don't think that needs to be part of the conversation, because he's playing football. It's hard work. They're out there doing much of the same things, especially in college. It's fascinating to see. It was more empowering of a moment than I thought. I did watch more of it, and it was interesting to see also how the "I'm a football player, I'm a man, I can't be crying" snapped back. And it was like, it was cool to see him be able to be vulnerable and then see how he knew, like, this is probably not what I want to be doing. I don't want to be crying. And I think that's not necessarily the right way to go about it. It was just interesting seeing the two sides of a human there in front of us all in that way.
Well, and the ability to compartmentalize is obviously a life skill. You have to be able to, in certain circumstances, they always say time and place.
Yes.
Time and place. And certainly there will be arguments that this was not the time or the place for this young man to have this reaction to break down. But also, don't we want people to not be cyborgs? Mm-hmm. Don't we want our athletes to be humans? Isn't that part of why we love sports? We always talk about in baseball the human error of the umpires and how that adds this level of drama, this layer of drama to the sports. I love that this young man was asked a question, felt it bubbling up, and you can see it all in real time.
Yes.
If you haven't seen the clip, it is readily available on social media. All of the outlets have it. People Today. I mean, it's everywhere. It's not just on your sports. But you can't, it's not like you have to go excavating it from, like, the Big Ten Network.
Right.
Man, this is everywhere. But I loved that there was this idea of, these are still people. And I want to juxtapose this very quickly, because I know we're running out of time, with what you sent us about the Little League World Series sending out posts saying, please do not be gambling on our games. The more that gambling infiltrates, and I'm not saying it's a bad thing, it is just a thing. The more that it infiltrates our sports, the less, and you tell me if I'm wrong, Joshy, the less we see these athletes as people. They are commodities. They become like, what can you do for me? How can you bolster my bank account? How can you make me a winner? And I think that it's very interesting that we saw these two things happen yesterday, of this young man crying at the podium, missing his family who is back in Australia, and the Little League World Series reminding people, please do not bet on 12-year-olds. What are you doing? Can we not do that? Thank you.
Yeah, and to be fair, I remember, this sort of just came rushing back to me, I believe it was an E60 back in the day, of the extremely lucrative gambling that happens in South Florida around youth football, around the age, like even younger, like 8, 9, 10 year olds, and just sort of how that became like a real issue for the leagues and all. And there is, when it comes to gambling, we see it all the time. So-and-so screwed up my parlay. And when you think of a professional athlete making tens of millions of dollars in many cases doing that, it's one thing to be like, well, that's sort of part of the deal. A punter from Australia who could get NIL, but I can't imagine is getting the most amount of money on that
team. Maybe now, actually.
Yeah, that's true. He might have raised his star there.
Kleenex is calling, yes, right? They're like, whoa, we got a great opportunity.
But
here,
to bet on a 12-year-old, like, there's few things I would say are inappropriate to bet on. Children, absolutely. Because the last thing you need is somebody going on Twitter and saying, this pitcher screwed up because he gave up X amount of runs in the fifth inning of a Little League World Series game. Don't let that happen. Don't let that. And to be fair, the places that you do this are like the offshore sort of like non-regulated. The reputable books are not going to allow you to gamble on 12-year-olds.
All you need to know is that at most books, Potawatomi is an example, you're not even allowed to bet on the college teams because they don't trust people's ability to not project their frustrations.
Right.
I'm not saying that.
Right.
I'm saying if they're doing this at the college level,
right,
then you should be able to follow the bouncing ball to 12-year-olds or 14-year-olds or whatever the age is, of course, that we're seeing featured on ESPN this week in the Little League World Series. I just found it so interesting that both of those things are such a good reminder. And I know it sounds simplistic. I know it sounds juvenile. I know it's a little trite, but people, these are people. And if we continue to remember that, I feel like it actually makes the sports viewing experience even better, mm-hmm. you know?
And think of all of our favorite athletes across Wisconsin. Certainly, there's an aspect of what Giannis does on the court. But would Giannis be as beloved if the character and person wasn't so damn likable? It wouldn't be nearly the same. And you could say some of it's contrived and athletes know what they're doing. And many of them are. And many of them are realizing their personality is a level of PR and a way to gain them more money. But there's plenty of guys who are just dudes and women you seem to really like. Because the way they represent themselves, the way they help out their community, the way all those other factors go into making them somebody you adore as an athlete you watch in your free time.
We'll take a break here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy, but it does feel like a good time to remind you this is an ad by BetterHelp. These days, it feels like there's advice for everything. You got cold plunges, you got gratitude journals, screen detoxes. How do you know what will actually work for you? There is an information overload about mental health and wellness, so it can be a struggle to know what's true and what action you should take if you are struggling. I have benefited from therapy. I've been doing it for more than 15 years. It has really helped me through some of those peaks and valleys of life, guys. You know, this whole idea of don't get too high, don't get too low. Sometimes I get low. And when I do, it's time to reach out to my therapist. If you find yourself in that situation, guys, BetterHelp could be the answer. With more than 30,000 therapists, it's the world's largest online therapy platform. They've served over 5 million people globally, and they have a 4.9 rating out of 5. 1.7 million client reviews. It's convenient as well. You do it with the click of a button from your home. You can fit therapy into your busy life, and you can switch therapists at any time if you feel like, you know what, this person isn't a good fit for me. They have other options that you can use. Unwind from work with BetterHelp. Our listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/timeout. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/timeout.
Jen, Gabe, and Chewy continues next on 94.5 ESPN. We're giving the games the place to say, I want something
to get me through this. Semi-tone kind of life. Baby, baby, I want something. Matt LaFleur giving an update yesterday on quarterback Jordan Love. Take a listen to what Matt LaFleur had to say about Jordan Love, who obviously had surgery on his non-throwing hand, was out there at joint practices yesterday with the Colts. Here's what Matt LaFleur had to say.
I wouldn't say right away, but we anticipate there'll be some sort of participation next week.
That's good news, obviously. Jordan Love having surgery on his non-throwing hand on that ligament. I believe he hurt it in the first preseason game. I think that's what we figured out, right? And that injury in particular, guys, you can argue about should he have done this? Was there a better way to navigate that situation? I think there's validity to all of that. Jordan Love needs to be better about protecting himself. He does. He's the most important player on the field. News flash, breaking news. I know this is high level stuff we are reporting here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. That is all well and good. Our guy Kyle Wallace on KBN had a slightly different take on Jordan Love getting injured in the first preseason game. Take a listen to that.
I love me some Jordan Love. I do. But somebody's got to say it. He is injury prone. Jordan Love is an injury prone quarterback. I don't know why you're making that face. He's been injured 2 out of the 3 seasons that he's been here in Green Bay. That is 2 out of 3 seasons that.
So that clip by Kyle Wallace got a lot of reaction. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes comments on the quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, Jordan Love, do. The problem with it is this. There are certain terms in sports that are just inflammatory. Mm-hmm. They just are, fair or unfair. And injury prone is one of them, especially to the franchise quarterback of an organization. It implies unreliability. It implies durability concerns. And this, it's not the only thing. There's a whole list of things. You know, we've been around sports long enough, Joshy. I can rattle them off. Short arms. Oh, you tell mm-hmm. me that an offensive lineman has short arms?
Say that to Brian Bulaga. He has an instant reaction.
Yeah, it suggests that they will struggle in pass protection, right? You say that a guy is undersized, right? It doesn't matter how athletic they are. They might be able to leap out of the gym, but if they are undersized, oh boy, they won't be able to compete.
Hand size for quarterback?
Hand size for quarterback is enough. Thin frame. Yeah. I've told this story over and over again on this show. Desmond Ridder, and you could argue about his success level or how good he's going to be at the next level. That kid was told at every stage he couldn't put weight on his frame.
Yep.
And for that reason, he was going to struggle. And he carried that chip, man. He carried it at Cincinnati. Mm-hmm. He has carried it into the NFL, where he is obviously a backup. I'm not sure if he's on a roster right now, actually. Not really. It doesn't really matter. Bad weight, heavy feet, tight hips. These are all things that when players get labeled them or characterized as such, it carries a stigma. And that is why it was frustrating to hear that Jordan Love is quote unquote injury prone by our colleague Kyle Wallace. Because I don't consider Jordan Love injury prone. I consider him this, Joshy, unlucky.
Yes.
These injuries that Jordan Love have suffered and how he has suffered them are not for lack of athleticism. They are not for, you know, he's not Mr. Glass out there. They are unlucky. And that happens sometimes. That happens in a physical sport, a demanding sport, where bodies are kind of getting rolled up on each other. And so I want to be careful on the nuance of Jordan Love has had injuries, yes. But the way I characterize those injuries is they're just unlucky.
Yeah, I'm going to say something here that might shock people. I disagree with Kyle Wallace. And guess what? That's okay. I think what Kyle said, I understand where he's coming from. I think the application of injury prone in this specific sense doesn't really follow what the facts actually show they are. I think Jordan Love can improve in terms of protecting himself. This is something Aaron Rodgers became great at and talked about, learning how to fall and learning how to not put yourself in situations that are going to lead to injury or have a higher rate of injury. Sure, of course, there are going to be instances where you cannot do that. But in a preseason game, the first preseason game, with your offensive line not quite how it's going to be, Jordan Love does need to be smarter there. Throw the ball away. Go get rid of it. Don't put yourself at risk. It's not worth it. And I think that's the biggest takeaway we should have from this.
From that play that resulted right in the injury. I agree with you 100%.
And I also do think now the information has changed. When we heard surgery procedure going to miss time, and then Jordan Love himself said, if this happened in season, I'd probably just end up playing through it. But we have the luxury of it being training camp where I can take some time, let this heal, and be ready to go for week one. I think with that information, I don't know for sure if Kyle's going to backtrack, because once you end up in these situations, you can find yourself just digging in and sticking with where you are. But that seemed to be lost on a lot of the reaction, that you can just disagree with somebody. It's not a personal slight. I do believe Kyle Wallace really likes Jordan Love. I also think that was something he believed at that time, and it's okay to disagree with him. The injury prone to me, I don't even know, aside from a few very limited cases, if I believe it actually even exists.
Okay, so I'm glad that you brought that up, because obviously when this thing went crazy, yeah, I was like, let's just take a look. Let me just Google. This is very simple. Again, I'm not doing like, you know, high level calculus right here. I literally just Googled NFL players who were considered injury prone. You uh-huh know who popped up on that list? Ben Roethlisberger.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Isn't he a future Hall of Famer? No question. Maybe not no question. There's people who might say that he's not, but a Hall of Famer nonetheless, I think. Let's talk about Adrian Peterson, who was a guy who popped up on a list that said injury prone. Is he not one of the greatest to right ever play at his position? Reggie Bush was on the list as injury prone. I think we all are familiar with Reggie Bush's resume as well. My point is this. Even guys in the league yes who have been historically considered, quote unquote, injury prone, have gone on to have historic mm-hmm careers, incredible careers, enviable careers. And so therefore, this idea of being, quote unquote, injury prone, which ultimately is just you've had a lot of injuries. Right. I could also argue that the longer you play, the more injuries yes you will have. It's not necessarily an indictment of how your career will no go. And here's the other thing I want to add to this. Jordan Love does not exist in a vacuum. Jordan Love exists in the same pantheon as Aaron Rodgers and Brett Favre, notorious iron men. Brett Favre has the streak of starts, and no mm-hmm doubt he was playing injured at times or hurt at times. But we are smarter now, aren't we, Joshy? Like, as a society and yep certainly in the NFL, where we actually don't necessarily always want the quarterback, the most important position out there. People criticized Aaron Rodgers for playing with a broken thumb.
Right.
Oh, should have sat. We stunk in those games. You weren't very good in those games, Aaron Rodgers. The responsible thing to do would have been to sit when you were hurt. But Aaron Rodgers came from the Brett Favre school of thought, which was, got to play, got to be out there, got to have my guys back, all of those types of things.
Yeah.
I like that evolution. I like the idea, Joshy, of if you're hurt, maybe what is in the best interest of the team and yourself is to not be out there.
Yeah, and I think there's sort of a tightrope these guys need to walk, because I think of Baker Mayfield and his time in Cleveland. He had an injury and he played through it because he believed that was the best for his team to go out and try and make the playoffs and make a run. Well, Baker Mayfield, because of playing hurt, ended up in a situation where he bounced around the league. And now, luckily for him, his talent has risen and he's gotten to a point where now he's considered like one of the better quarterbacks in all the NFL. But we don't retroactively apply the, well, there's probably a reason why somebody is playing injured here, where I think it would have been probably better for Baker to just sit out. But you will look at all your fans, you look at all the people who rely on you, your teammates that are in the locker room with you, and you say, I'm going to try to do my best.
Well, and sometimes there is a narrative of, man, you are one injury away from being a quote unquote bust.
Right.
Right. When we talked about those words associated with sports that are very flammable, right?
Yes.
That are inflammatory. That's another one.
Yeah.
And so Baker Mayfield is making a business decision to go out there and play hurt because he wants to prove that he belongs in the league. Right. Some of these guys are one step from being holding a clipboard or being analysts online, having their own YouTube stream.
Yeah.
Right. And so like to stave that off, some of these guys feel they have no choice but to be out there, not at 100%.
Yes, I totally agree. And the last thing I really want to leave us here with is, instead of reacting and sending threats and mean words, just share your opinion on why you think Kyle's wrong. Kyle's big enough. He's mature enough to be disagreed with. And Alex Strofe and I believe Ben Bruss both disagreed with him there. It seems like there's a thing growing, and it's been going on for a while, where if you don't say what I like, I hate you and you're an idiot. And it's like, well, he's from the same fan base. He's rooting for Jordan
Love.
Well,
and that's the thing that I would say specifically about Kyle, right? Like, we all have different resumes.
Right.
I come from a journalist space, right?
Yep.
I've been covering sports, as I tell you guys often, for 25 years, okay? That should give me a level of credibility when we're talking about these types of things. Kyle is a fan.
Uh-huh. He's an owner.
He loves the teams in Wisconsin. And he wants, you know, for whatever, you know, people may say, he wants them to be good.
Yes.
So when he speaks in that way, guys, it is coming from that like panic space of, I'm nervous, I'm concerned that my guy who will dictate the success of my team, at least for the foreseeable future, may have an injury proneness.
Yes.
That's what he is saying. I think we need to recognize that like there is a portion of the fan base that feels that way, and that Kyle was representing that portion of the fan base. What I want to make sure we're not getting into is a cheerleader space,
right,
where every single day we are being asked to or expected to root for the home team.
Mm-hmm.
We want the home team to win. But if we see cracks in the armor or we see things that, you know, need to be addressed, our credibility should speak for itself at some level.
Yeah, and I also think if we weren't offering opinions, you wouldn't be here. It would just be us telling you, reading you box scores. And Jen,
I am good at reading on the radio, by
the way. This is going to be a hard thing for me to say, and I don't want to apply this to you, but sometimes I'm going to be wrong. And sometimes we're all going to be wrong. And there's a lot of opinions that happen here. And I'm okay with being wrong. I'm not okay being called an idiot or ugly or being sent threats. That's totally inappropriate. This is fun. It's something we get to do and experience with all the fans out there. And I want all the feedback. Tell me why I'm wrong. Call into the show and tell me you're wrong because X, Y, and Z. But telling me I'm an idiot and don't deserve to be on the radio, it's not going to get what we want out of this.
Yeah. Let's just be clear. The unalive comments, guys, go too far.
Yes.
All right.
Way too far.
The posting of people's addresses online, too far. Okay.
Yes.
So let's make sure that we're keeping it in check. The sports are fun.
Yes.
Opinions are fun. We are all not going to agree on things. Kyle Wallace, in this instance, I disagree.
Couldn't
with
disagree
his
with him more.
Assertion that Jordan Love is injury prone. Doesn't mean I don't like him. Doesn't mean I think he's a bad guy.
Big Kyle
and hopefully,
fan.
Hopefully everybody else can just take a beat, take a breath, take a moment, and maybe get to that place as well. We're going to take a beat, a breath, and a moment here on Jen, Gabe, and Chewy. Roll on right after this.
Your state, your teams, your ESPN. The ESPN Wisconsin app. Find the ESPN Wisconsin app in the Apple or Android app stores today. More Jen, Gabe, and Chewy coming up on 94.5 ESPN.
Here we go. Very quickly before we go, Joshy, I have a declaration here to send you off into the weekend. There's too many shows. Okay? I haven't even finished watching Quarterback yet on Netflix. Is that what it's on? I don't even know what the streaming service is.
Yes, I believe you're correct.
My girlfriend, Kristen Lapis, we have had her on the show. She directed the Giannis documentary that was on Netflix. She did The Kingdom, which is ESPN's on the Chiefs, the Kansas City Chiefs. It is dropping, I believe, yesterday, and I want to watch it, and I have so many things I haven't watched yet. I may get to it in January. I don't know if I'm going to have the capacity to be able to do this. There's too many shows.
Yeah, I as excited as I am for football season, I'm worried about the rest of my life going by the wayside.
Because you're watching the shows?
Well, can I watch shows and watch football?
No,
and how
no.
I got to clean the house.
The live events come
first. I
got
to run errands.
The live events take precedent. I can always watch The Kingdom later, I guess. But everybody's going to be talking about it. I'm going to have FOMO. This is what's happening. There's too many shows.
Planes.
Too many shows. Too many shows. Hey, here's a show. Wildy and Tausch is next on 94.5 ESPN Milwaukee.